5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Episode of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Disney Man, ESPN's own Chris Algieri, 140 pound champion of the world, shaking his head. Yes, you are a Disney Man now.
No, they paid.
They paid you.
Just filling in for Tim Bradley while he was on vacation. This is not a deal, nothing like that. I am a Pro Box TV analyst. I was filling in for my buddy Tim Bradley, who's also works with us at ProVox TV. So
I'll tell you what, though, the reviews are in and they are outstanding. Everyone loved your suit. Everyone loved your analysis. Everyone was happy to see you there and give your astute understanding and analysis of the sweet science. Teofimo Lopez defeats Steve Clackett. We're going to review that. We're going to review Bam Rodriguez's unbelievable performance taking out Juan Francisco Estrada.
That boy is bad.
This episode is brought to you, and every episode is brought to you by PPV.com. No subscriptions. It is the best way to order pay-per-view live events, whether it's AEW wrestling, whether it's boxing. Our next big one is going to be Terrence Crawford, Israel Madrimov on August 3rd out in L.A. We have some really big plans for that content-wise, and maybe even a party, maybe even a red carpet. Chris, bring your tuxedo to L.A. because we might be doing something real big with PPV.com. We'll never ask you for a subscription. You can stream it to your phone, tablet, or your big screen TV. We're also going to be carrying Masvidal versus Diaz and Jake Paul versus Mike Perry, who I did some interviews with this last week. This should be rolling out soon. That is all courtesy of our partners, PPV.com. Go check them out. Chris, before we get into the fights, what was your experience like working on ESPN? I know you've done some big calls. I know you've done some in-away fights. This is a little different, though. You're at the desk with Joe. You're going through the whole thing. I saw they even gave you like a little Teofimo cutting off the ring thing, where I'm sure you had to rehearse that. Just take us through the experience. Bring us into the experience of working an ESPN Top Rank card.
I mean, it was great. I always enjoyed working with Top Rank. They're a top notch group, and obviously ESPN has been their networking carrier for a long time. So now this particular gig was with the ESPN crew, all guys that I know. Which is funny because a lot of the same guys are still there that actually covered my fights when I fought on ESPN. So that's why they threw in that little vignette of
Bro,
me
I
and
saw
my,
that.
Yeah, the vignette of me
that
and my.
That was before they went live. It was
in my
like,
parents' house. Yeah,
that was so cool. Like I'd never seen that before. You were like running in the street. You were drinking spinach. You're praying with your mom. That was just like that was awesome stuff.
Yeah, that was the Friday night I fought on a Friday night. I was main event of Friday Night Fights card, and they came to the house with this whole, you know, interview process, and they video like kind of like what the day of the life is of a fighter on fight day. It was a cool experience. So like, again, like I said, all those producers were on staff when I was still fighting 11, 12 years ago now. And so they brought that on to make me feel comfortable. It was fantastic. They rolled out the red carpet to make sure that I was very comfortable and that we were going to get a good show. And I think the product speaks for itself. So it was fun, man. And it was cool to kind of reconvene with all the guys that I've worked with in the past. It was very, very comfortable for me. You know, I know Joe Tess and Mark Kriegel really well, and Bernardo Osuna is fantastic. And I always see those guys whenever I do the international calls with Top Rank. So it was way more familiar than I was expecting. Nothing really new. Definitely a busy schedule, but I'm used to that with Pro Box TV. Pro Box TV now stepped up. We did a championship fight on Friday night over in DC with Lamont Roach as the main event. And very, very similar feeling in terms of how much work it was involved. You know, I called 10 fights on Friday and I called like 7 or 8 on Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, so it was two back to back, really, really heavy days. I'm surprised my voice held up.
That's like one thing. I mean, I've called fights too. I've done play by play, I've done analyst. 10 fights is
a lot.
It's long.
Yeah. Very, very long, night. And then back to back nights too. And it was like, and travel in between. I had to fly like early Saturday morning to come in for the fight. Luckily it was close. It was on the same coast, you know, it was DC on Friday and then Miami on Saturday, which is close to home anyway. But also I was in Europe for 2 weeks prior to that. So a lot
Come on, bro. Take it easy. What are you doing?
No rest for the wicked, man. No rest for the wicked. I'm a bad, bad man.
What are you doing the next
3 days? Hopefully sitting in the dark with my dog. That's pretty much the plan.
With my dog. Yeah, it was cool to see you, man. I was very cool. Got a lot of messages from our faithful listeners on Instagram.
Met a lot of them at the fights, actually. A lot of IBL listeners came up to me, took some photos, tagged us in a few shots. People are telling us that they love what we're doing. So that I know you love hearing that. I love hearing it as well.
The IBL faithful is growing. So that was awesome. That was a cool little weekend for you and a win for the team. A win for Team IBL. It's always.
Oh, one more thing. I got to call fights with Sean Porter on Friday for the Pro Box TV card for Mount Roach. I've never called fights with Sean Porter. I think him and I were both equally excited to work together. Something that we both wanted to do for a while, and it was a ton of fun, man. Sean's a great analyst. Super fun to work with. Very easy. It was surprising. You know, I work with a lot of new people today. And Dan, you call fights. You know how it is when you're working with somebody new. There's a little bit of a feeling out process. I had none of that with Sean. Like, it was immediately, we both knew exactly what we're doing. He's a consummate professional. Him and I are friends anyway, so that definitely helps. But even with, you know, working with Tess and Kriegel and Bernardo, very, very seamless in terms of the transition.
Yeah, that's awesome. Friday night at Pro Box, you guys, they brought out the red carpet. It was champs galore. It was like you, it was Porter. You had Marquez.
Antonio Barrera.
It was like, Pro Box does not mess around. So that was a nice little weekend. Are you tired of boxing yet?
No, not even a little bit.
I hope not, because we're about to talk even more about boxing. Let's start.
I'm still excited, man, especially because, bam, I got to watch it. I watched it like 2 hours ago. I'm still jacked.
It was an unbelievable performance. We'll start with Bam Rodriguez stopping Juan Francisco Estrada, a virtuoso performance, landing over 50% of his total punches, carving up the all-time legend in Estrada, not before getting dropped himself. Bam Rodriguez hit the canvas for the first time in his career, but this was a coming out party. This was a guy that we knew was good and now takes off another legend at 115 pounds. He only has one more to go, and that's Chuck Liddito. We don't know if he's going to get that, but what I love from this fight, Chris, is just the poise. We know he had the poise, Jesse Rodriguez. We knew he has the precision, but now it looks like he's putting it all together. He was way more on his front foot. He was way more aggressive. You're running out of superlatives for this guy. He is now top five pound for pound. I don't do pound for pound lists, but if I did, how do you deny this guy the pound for pound status? I mean, this is what pound for pound is about. It's jumping different weights. It's dominating. It's resume. He's 24 years old and he has a Hall of Fame resume. It's unbelievable. I just wish more people watched the fight. I'm not going to be that guy, but it was on really late, but I'm going to focus on the positives. Bam Rodriguez is a top five fighter in boxing today.
Old man Dan talking about how late the fights are. Surprise, surprise.
1:30 in the morning.
First thing I text you when after the fight, it was about 1:15 in the morning when I was texting you. I was like, let the pound for pound discussions begin about Bam Rodriguez, because it's absolutely true. I mean, and then I texted you that I don't know if there's anyone else in the world who would be a more difficult style to fight than Bam Rodriguez. Now I'm talking from a fighter's perspective. You got a southpaw. You got a guy, he can move. He goes in and out really well. He showed that last night. In and out, got lateral movement. He's got a good jab. He's consistent. He's a great counterpuncher. He's got power in both hands. He is dogged in his approach. Obviously, we saw him actually walk Estrada down. He kept Estrada down to lower punch numbers. I mean, you're the punch guy, but it seemed like he wasn't punching as often or as much as he used to or has in the past. And, I mean, walking through shots, except for the one that dropped him, but didn't deter him at all. He got up and went right back to work. Absolutely. Virtuoso was the word they used. That's a fantastic word. I use the word complete. It was a complete performance from Bam Rodriguez. I mean, he's got everything. He's got the in and out. He's got the movement. He's got the head movement. He's got the defense. He's got the aggression. He's got the finishing instincts. He's got the setups. He sets traps. And he's doing it with legends. It's not just that he's looking this good against ho-hum guys. You know, he's doing it against the top dogs. He's doing it against the Mount Rushmore of the flyweights, which is not even, I'm not exaggerating. That's not hyperbole. He is doing it to the best guys in the world and have been for a very long time.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can poke holes in every fighter these days. You can point at their resume. You can point at inactivity. You can point at, oh, they get hit too much, or I don't like they don't have enough power. this, that, and the other. There's always an if. There's always a but. But Jesse Rodriguez right now, there you can eliminate all of that. I mean, he is fighting the top names. He is dominating them. He's not just beating a Quadros. He's not just beating a Rung Visai. He's not just beating Sonny Edwards. He's not just beating Juan Francisco Estrada. He's absolutely dominating them. He's stopping them. He is filling up the stat sheet. Look at this, these numbers right now. He is number one in all of boxing in total connect percentage, 39.7%. He's landing close to 40% of his total punches. Jabs, 28.7, number one. And he's also number one in power connect percentage at 49.1. How about plus minus? Hit and don't get hit. He's right at the top of that list too. That's literally everything. I mean, he's got it all right now, and he's fun to watch. People know him now because he's just got a cool name. That's also helpful. Bam. Even though his name is Jesse Rodriguez.
He's got a cool look, just, too. He looks cool.
Right, you got the Harry Potter glasses, and you got a little bit of swag. He's got a little bit of style.
Got some tattoos on his sideburns, you know.
I don't like those because I'm a fade guy. Like I like.
Yeah, but nice... we're in a different era. You got to understand. He's a younger guy. Like he's into like anime and stuff. Like it's a different world now, man.
Did you see that he was like 12 years old when Estrada fought Chocolatito?
That's so crazy.
That's like want to feel old. Well, yeah. Jesse Rodriguez was 10 or 11 years old when he watched his hero. Chocolatito get in the ring with
I felt Estrada old because I looked at Estrada's career and he started his pro career after mine. I was like, oh, wow, dang. I feel like he's like ancient, but he's not.
34, and I'll say this about Estrada. He obviously looked overmatched in there and he was almost getting bullied at points, but the guy's still a wily vet. That's the reason why he reminds me of Marquez and is the reason why he is a Mexican legend because he stunned Jesse Rodriguez, dropped him, and Rodriguez afterwards said, I always wanted to experience what it was like to get dropped in a fight. I know it's not a great thing, but I got up off the canvas and it made me stronger, and it did. But shout out to Juan Francisco Estrada. He has a rematch clause. I don't know why. I don't have to see this fight again, but I think we're going to get it again in the fall. Jesse Rodriguez, bam, wants to fight the winner of Fernando Martinez and Ioka, which would be a unification bout. Junto Nakatani is out there, but he's at 118 pounds. And then, of course, there's the Inoue fight, which the casuals and the media is going to pump ahead, which is not a bad thing. You know, like this is like part of being top 5 pound for pound. You have names that they're going to throw out. You have dream fights that they're going to throw out to you. It's not a bad thing to be linked with Inoue. It's not a bad thing to be linked with like a Chocolatito. But that body punch, Chris, I know you want to talk about it. It's the punch that ended the fight. It was a beautiful sequence. It's up on my Twitter page right now. And I just love his footwork. So what did you see in that body shot? It was just so spiteful.
Yeah, I'm gonna take, you know, cut everything down into microcosm, just talk about the finish, right? Because I was actually talking to our buddy of the podcast, Corey Erdman, about that sequence. And I said to him, I'm like, that's the kind of sequence that you see a guy do on pad work with a coach where you go, I'll never need this. But he made it work. So he comes out, he throws it. Everything started with the jab, the southpaw jab. Throws the jab, slips, gets hit a little bit, comes with the left body shot. That left shovel punch for a southpaw goes right to the liver of an orthodox fighter, especially as they stretch out with that right hand. Boom. So stay with me at home, guys. Boom. Throws that, misses a little bit, goes more towards like the hip bone, and then goes, you know what? I want to make that work. So he cuts an angle. Misses that shot slightly. Boom. Steps out to his right, which is staying to the weak side of his orthodox opponent, but he keeps the hand up because Estrada's smart. He saw that, throws the hook. Doesn't matter. The hand came right back. Boom, bang, steps out, cuts an angle, creates an opening. Now also, not only does that protect him, it keeps that left arm out and exposed. So now we have an open stance for Estrada. Left hook, left uppercut, shuttle punch just again, right on the money, right to the liver. First one a little short. You know what? I want to get it. He's dogged about it, goes back to it, creates an opening. Lands it, no getting up from that shot. As soon as that thing landed, he knew it. I mean, I knew it. He knew it. You saw the way he walked away?
Yeah.
He came back smiling, walking back as the ref is finishing the count, like, that's it. I got it. Home run swing. You feel, you don't feel it and you feel it at the same time. Amazing.
Right. That's what you talk to any baseball player who hits a home run. They say like it just feels so natural and like you don't even feel the bat hitting the ball, just like this reverberation goes through your body. That's what it looks like with Bam. He's so technical, and we've seen this with the footwork with I think it was a Quadros
angles
sequence that it was all over social media the day after. Every time he fights, it's another thing too. Every time he fights, he produces these highlight reel knockouts or these highlight reel moments of footwork and angles and making it. That's just cool to me, is that like it's not just like brutal knockout. It's not just like a Mike Tyson supercut of just like uppercuts from hell. Yeah, it's like this guy is doing like the sweet science. Like it's the footwork, the footwork to go along with the with obviously his approach. It's all in one. That's why it feels so fluid and it feels so natural. And if you watch that KO sequence, it all happens so fast, but the whole body is moving. And like you said, Chris, like you just broke it down on how technical he is with covering one side of his face while stepping out. And it just like, it's unbelievable to watch. And the fact that he's doing it against big time competition. Yeah, I will poke a hole in this because like, you can poke a hole in everything. Yeah, some of these guys are towards the end of their careers. There's no doubt about it, but they're still dangerous. Like yes, you have to fight obviously. The fights. You have to fight the fights that are in front of you. Take a Quadras fight. Take a Rung Vasai fight. Dominate them. Dominate Juan Francisco Estrada. I've never seen Estrada get bullied like that. No. Beat a guy in his prime in Sonny Edwards, who's still damn good. Doesn't have any power, but he can box. I mean, the guy's got it all. Like, he should be top five, and it was an unbelievable performance.
It's one of those things where you look to knock him for something, and yeah, you knock him on the age, but guess what? He's doing what he's supposed to do. Oh, so the guy's old? Okay. I'm going to dominate him, knock him out. And he does. So it's kind of like he counters your knock on what he's doing. That you mentioned the angles, Dan. That was big. So when he first hurt Estrada early on, I think it was the second round. He cut an angle and hit him with an uppercut, which is the exact sequence that he hit Quadras with and dropped him when they fought. That was really the difference. Estrada looked like he was fighting 2D chess and Bam was fighting 3D. You know, his ability to cut the angles. You know, Estrada's so good when you're right in front of him. He's so used to that Mexican style back and forth. You're in front of me. I'm in front of you. We're going to go, 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 go. But Bam just isn't there. He makes himself invisible. He cuts the angle to the weak side, and then he comes up with those shots. And that's why I mentioned he's so difficult to fight, because he's a southpaw too. So he's got those. He knows those angles. He stays outside that weak side, stays outside that front foot, creates open. And that's the thing about him. At his age and his experience level, he's got 20 fights.
Yeah.
His ability to create openings on guys who are legends and so experienced, that's what blows my mind away. When you really start to watch boxing, those next level guys are able to create, and Bam's one of those guys. He creates the openings when they aren't right there. And that's why that sequence is so amazing to me, because he wanted that punch and he found it. He created an opening to make it. And that's what makes him just absolutely next level. He's always been my favorite fighter in terms of his personality. Yeah, I love his style. He's been fun. But he's approaching my favorite fighter all around. In a way, he's my guy. That's my number one. That's my number one favorite fighter in the world. But Bam is like nipping at his heels at this point for me, because the things that I'm seeing him and as he progresses, it's next level stuff, guys.
Bam Rodriguez versus Naoya Inoue is going to be pushed right now because why not? They are too.
You heard his response to that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Shutting that down right away because he's like, dude, there's 2 weight classes apart. I haven't even done a lot. I want to accomplish at the weight class right now. I want to unify. Then I want to go maybe to 119. There's Junto Nakatani there. Like, the Inoue fight will always be there because Inoue is just turned 30 and Bam is 24 and he's still growing. It could happen down the road. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen. It's a good thing to be linked to an all-time great like that if you're Bam Rodriguez. Boxing's all about that, dreaming about the big fight and wondering if it can happen. Can a fighter jump 2 weight classes? Can a fighter jump 3 weight classes? Can that happen? Yeah, eventually it can happen. But let's just appreciate how good Bam Rodriguez is right now. He landed 49.5% of his power shots against Estrada. He landed 62% of his power shots against Sonny Edwards. He landed 65% of his power shots versus Sor Rung Vasai. Oh, and he only landed 45% of his power shots against Quadras. I mean, these are like gaudy numbers. These are like Steph Curry from three. Like, these are like insane, insane numbers that he's putting up, which kind of nullifies the whole he's fighting guys at the end of their rope. Like, no, he's not. He's okay. It'd be different if he was struggling with these guys. It'd be different if he was going 12 rounds and he was getting gift decisions because he's the younger fighter that the promoter is more behind. Like, he's leaving no doubt. So you can poo-poo that and take that away. I'm trying to think about some more things with this guy. And what got me thinking with Bam is American fighters today. So obviously Bam Rodriguez is top five, pound for pound, I think, in the world. But he is an American fighter. He is of Mexican descent, but he is an American fighter. And it got me thinking about who are the best American fighters today. And I think there's two classes, Chris. I think there's Crawford, there's Tank, and then there's Bam. And then the second tier, I think there's the TOs, the Shakur, there's Boots, Spence, if you want to still look at him as an active fighter. But, you know, in addition to being top five in all of boxing, he's one of the best American fighters we got today.
Oh, hands down. Absolutely. I mean, and he's angling himself to be the best American fighter. And he's looking to be the best fighter in the world. I think that, you know, we talked about him potentially now we're looking at top five pound for pound, definitely in the talks now. He's definitely broken into top 10 now. You know, is he going to be approaching the top five? Is he in the top five? I would say he's probably approaching it. I think I need to see a little bit more against, you know, some more competition because it's so early in his career. But yeah, no, he's angling himself at number one. And a lot of the guys are older, man. You know, Terrence Crawford, Canelo Alvarez, even Inoue. Inoue's 30. You know, there's at those lighter weights, and especially the way that he's moving up, he's in his fourth or fifth weight class now. How much longer is Inoue going to be at the top? And Bam looks like he's right in line to take over next. And it's not just all the things that we've been saying. It's I want to talk on the post-fight interview. He was flawless. His answers are just so real and genuine. And so that, I think that's really important too. For being a star, that matters. You're endeared to him because of the way that he responds and acts, and he talks like a fighter. He acts like a fighter. He wants all the smoke. And I think American fans especially are endeared to that.
Yeah, and he might be running out of dance partners because he just keeps taking these guys out. It's so unconventional what he's doing and how he's doing it, whereas we as boxing fans are kind of programmed to be like, oh, you wait until you're 30 to fight a guy like Estrada. You wait until you're 30 to fight a guy like Rungvisai. He just
a knock on Tank. Time. That's a direct knock on Tank there, Dan. Geez, you're throwing.
I wasn't thinking of Tank. I mean, someone out there will. Someone on YouTube would be like, Dan was talking about Tank there. But two different. This shows you how different boxing is and how it's just like it's different for each fighter. Each fighter's journey is so different. With Bam, right place, right time, right promoter, right dance partners, go for it. Because now he's 24 years old, and he's honestly running out of opponents. I mean, he can fight Ioka and the Martinez winner. That's great. But he's always getting to the point where it's like with Inoue, where it doesn't matter who he's fighting. You just want to watch because he's brilliant, and you just want to watch someone at the top of their game, at the top of their craft. Like, yeah, he'll probably get that unification bout. And yeah, he'll probably go to 118, and a Junto Nakatani fight would be legendary. I mean, Junto Nakatani is lighting it up at 118. He's tall, he's rangy, he's powerful. That's a fight that could be made. There are fights out there for Bam, but he's had a great, great start to his career. He's had a Hall of Fame start to his career. If he retired today, you could make a case that he is a first ballot Hall of Famer because of the names that he's knocked off and how he's done it. That's so freaking cool. I think he's top five. I mean, I would put, like, obviously there's Crawford, there's Inoue, Usyk, Canelo. And then I think he's, like, right there in that second, like, tier. Like, I think he's second tier, which is him.
I still have him just outside top five because I got Bivol ahead. It's hard for me to put him past Canelo. I know I'm gonna get raked over the coals for that one.
Come on.
People, I don't know. There's a lot of hate.
Dude, Canelo has a better case for top four in pound for pound than Bam Rodriguez.
Well, I put Canelo in my top five and people scoff and I'm like, come on, man. This is
like five is reasonable for Canelo.
Yeah, that's where I have him. I have Bivol at four. I got it. Usyk, Crawford, Inoue, then Bivol, Canelo. For my top five. So I got Bam just outside that. Him and Better Biev are like, you know, like right there. Better Biev though, I've been very pessimistic about whether we're going to ever see him again. And if we do, if we're going to see him at the top level, because I think it's going to be really tough for him at his age to get through camps, to get to fights.
That's supposed to be August 13th, Better Biev versus Bivol, which is another...
It was supposed to be, and then it was supposed to be, so let's
No, see. I agree with you. I'm 100%, like, I'm pessimistic on that fight ever happening. But I'm very optimistic on Bam Rodriguez being a 24-year-old stud and helping bring boxing into more homes, despite it being at 1:30 in the morning. I waited 20 minutes into the show. I tweeted it out. Don't want to be that guy, but everyone responded. Be that
guy. You are that guy. Dan, you're that guy.
Everyone responded because I want the sport like to grow. Like I this is a guy that everyone should be building around. Like DAZN, he should be their main focus. Bam Rodriguez, Matchroom, he should be the main focus. I understand huge crowd in Phoenix, Arizona. The gate means a lot. The gate means a lot to the promoter because they keep that money. DAZN doesn't get any of the gate. So the promoter puts the fight on at 10 p.m. local time in Phoenix, which is great for the Phoenix fans because they showed up. They were packed
Mexican
into that.
Fans, yep.
Mexican fans, they were packed into that arena before on the prelims, which is something that you don't see in boxing ever. So shout out to Phoenix fans and shout out to all the fight fans that step out on a Saturday night and go to fights. I'm not saying that. But for this is the latest I've ever seen a main event. We're talking like 115 ring walks in the East Coast. I know I'm a little East Coast biased, but I mean, that's important. Like everyone's East Coast biased. That's the reason why NBA final games and Major League Baseball games and World
Series. The world is East Coast biased.
Yes. Like starts at 8 p.m. Like, I'm not saying like have it started at, you know, super early, but like 10 p.m. we should be getting the main event on the East Coast. It still can service the fans on a Saturday night in the West Coast. That's my only beef on a perfect night for Bam Rodriguez is I just wish more people saw it. And there were a lot of responses to the tweet saying like, yeah, it was ridiculous. I had to watch it in the morning. It's not the same thing watching it in the morning, or I didn't watch it at all. The West Coast people were loving it, of course, because West Coast is the coolest coast to watch sports on. You watch NFL football at 10 a.m.
And then you go out afterwards.
Right. It's awesome. Like they're not going to listen to my beefs, but I just wish more people saw it because this was like a star-making performance. This is like one of those performances where you're like, wow, this guy is everything that's right with the sport, taking on all comers and dominating them. What's next for Bam Rodriguez? We'll see. Rematch clause is there. Hate rematch clauses. There's no reason Juan Francisco Estrada. Another negative, too, I didn't want to really talk about was the scorecards. Only one judge had Bam winning the fight, which is insane because he had
split
dropped
right down the middle.
Dude, what? He had Estrada dropped early. He was dominating him. Like you talk about the punch numbers. Yeah, Chris, you're absolutely right. Estrada's numbers were way down. He wasn't landing anything. There's always got to be something from the judges that just going to piss us off. And for this one, it was Bam only up on one judge's scorecard, which is absurd.
You know, Estrada is such a legend that he starts the fight with two rounds already in the bank. That's the only thing that it could
shouldn't.
Do. I know, of course not, but tennis and judges have to think about legends and the way that they score fights oddly, but you know, it is what it is.
So Bam gets the win. That was over on DAZN. Over to ESPN, where you were on the call, which was pretty freaking cool. Every time they said, "Oh yeah, we're alongside Chris Algieri," did like a little double take. Teofimo and Claggett. We'll start with the main event. Teofimo Lopez goes the distance with Steve Claggett, which could be looked at as a bad thing, but I don't think it was exactly the worst thing for Teofimo Lopez. He was pushed to limits that he's never been pushed before. He landed career highs. He threw career highs. His face was all lumped up, which a lot of fans at home look at that as a loss. It's not. Everyone's face and skin is built different. Teofimo gets the win. You were on the call. What did you make of his performance? Because I'm getting a lot of mixed reviews. I thought it was fine.
I predicted that it would go the distance, but I also said that he really needed a knockout. But in hindsight, I think I agree with you, Dan. I think it was actually a great performance. And I think that he showed a different level to his game. And I think we're seeing the evolution of Teofimo Lopez. Is he the guy who's going to be icing guys at one shot like he was at 35? No. He left his power at 35. He is now, that was his fifth fight at junior welterweight. He is 5-0 with one KO. And that KO came against Pedro Campa. And it was more of attrition. He hit him with the same shots that he iced guys at 35. But Campa took him. And he kind of broke him down and was able to get rid of him. And then now, so we're seeing, the evolution. And one of the issues with Teofimo in the past was his gas tank. You know, he would get quote unquote tired. He blames his asthma a lot. He said he's been dealing with asthma his entire career. He's obviously in a very explosive athlete. A lot of times those guys' gas tanks aren't great. You know, they're more like, fight for a moment, explode, sprint, and now we got to rest. This is the first time he didn't have a chance to rest. And you got to see him dig deep. Now, he had said afterwards that he knew that this guy was going to bring it and need to be in great shape. He showed incredible conditioning. He showed that he understands that at these weights, he's going to have to go rounds, that he's going to have to throw more punches. He's got to be busier. He keeps flirting with the idea of moving up to 47. If you're not knocking guys out of 40, you're not knocking guys out of 47. Those guys are bigger. You're going to have to be in fantastic shape, and you're going to have to look to go 12. So this version of Teofimo Lopez, who's able to go rounds, maintain a pace, he still looked very explosive in the 12th round from his rapid, explosive, twitchy head movement to his explosive counters. That was still there in 11 and 12 after throwing damn near 1,000 punches in a 12-round fight. That's impressive on its face. So, I don't knock the performance, the fact that he goes 12. But listen, we got to stop thinking about Teofimo Lopez as that one-punch guy. He's not, especially at 40. But he does have the skills. He does have the boxing ability. He does have the athleticism to compete at the highest level with the highest guy, the best guys at 140. And in my eyes, he is the best guy at 140.
Yeah, there was a lot of reasons why he was graded a little harshly by some fans, because I did put out, how would you rate Teofimo's performance right after the fight? Got hundreds of submissions, and a lot of them were trash. Don't go to 147. Should have got this guy out of there. He's on the back nine, Teofimo. His best days are behind him. And because of that is because he was so spectacular at 135, and he accomplished so much at 135, had these highlight reel knockouts, beat Richard Comey to win a title in a highlight reel knockout, beat Vasily Lomachenko, did the thing at 135 with, and he was just so outstanding that he's rated so highly now that anything other than that is going to be looked at as a bad performance. So now he's at 140. On top of it too, he's very braggadocious. He is very outspoken. He's very confident. On top of that, he says he wants to go to 147. He's been calling out Terrence Crawford's name. And I'm going to go even more on top of that. I'm just piling up all those reasons. Is Steve Claggett was a hand-picked opponent. He was presented Kenneth Sims, Raymond Murataya, Steve Claggett. I believe there was one more. He chose Steve Claggett.
It was Sims.
Yeah, Sims, Murataya, and Steve Claggett. He chose Steve Claggett, who was very open about it too, which I was surprised by. ESPN, Top Rank. We're like, I've never heard of that. Like, hey, here's three. I know this happens all the time in boxing, but I've never seen them be so transparent. And yeah, I chose Steve Claggett. I chose like the weakest of the three on paper. But Claggett was really tough. Like Claggett had a freaking, just put his head down.
Iron chin.
Hard like man. Some of those shots that Teofimo was landing on Claggett would have knocked out a lot of 140 pounders.
The uppercuts. He picked this guy, though. I couldn't believe how his face didn't get all marked up. That guy is made out of iron. And I spoke to his coaches afterwards, and you know they were happy with his performance. He's obviously a very limited guy, but he trains really hard. He's in great shape. He does like ultra marathon stuff in between, so his conditioning is there, and he always out-conditioned guys. But guess what? He got out-punched. And if you're a volume puncher and you get out-punched, then you got outclassed. But the scorecards represented that. I gave Claggett a few of those first couple rounds. Two of the judges, I think, had a clean sweep, and one judge gave him one round. I think he did a little better than that, but not much. I mean, he got outclassed. He got outpunched. He got hurt. Nose was bloodied. Got rocked a few times, but just got an iron will kind of guy. Can other guys in the weight class stop him? I do believe so, yes. But, you know, Teofimo showed a lot of different aspects to his game, different facets that I wasn't sure that he was able to do. So, yeah, I'm not going to be super harsh on him. Should he get a guy out of there with seven losses? Yes. But I think Claggett actually put on the best version of himself for what he could do with a guy like Teo.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, he has a lot of expectations, Teofimo. He says afterwards, I'm one of Top Rank's last remaining stars. Like, Bob Arum might not be happy with that performance, but guess what? He's stuck with me. Like, he'll say things like that, and he built up this reputation of being a knockout.
That's why he gets booed.
I know. So yeah, I mean, he handpicked this guy. He has unbelievable power at 135. He doesn't have that power anymore, but it was still a really good performance. It was still a performance that I think could translate to some of the best at 140. Could translate to some of the best at 147, because he's talking about going up to 147. And the gas tank thing, you're so right, because I would say that about Teofimo. I was like, man, I wish he would just like put his punches together a little more. Like, he used to throw 40 or 45 punches. He was out throwing Claggett. I mean, we're talking about, like, it was a couple of rounds where he threw over 100 punches, Teofimo. Mm-hmm. He had career highs. Yep. So Claggett pushed Teofimo, and at the end of the fight, Teofimo still looked fresh, and that's going to translate. Now, will it translate to 147 pounds? Teofimo Lopez wants to go up to welterweight. WBO champion at welterweight is Brian Norman, who is also signed with Top Rank. Can Teofimo Lopez defeat Brian Norman, become a champion at 147?
Yes. Yes, he can. I don't know if he wants that. So in his interviews that he was doing for the ESPN telecast, he was talking a lot more about legacy than belts. But then at the end of the fight, he said belts matter to him. I'm going to push on this moving to 47. I think that he has an opportunity based on what the landscape of 140 now looks like, because it got a complete facelift in the last 2 months. We have an entirely new group of guys. Teofimo was the only one left standing of the original guard that was there. You know, you got the Liam Paro who upset Matias, who was the boogeyman. You got Abuelo?
Yeah, Abuelo. Albert Puelo.
Apuelo.
Alberto Puelo.
His name's not Grandma. Albert Puelo, who put on a fantastic performance against, I am tired.
Gary Antoine Russell. It's all right, bro. You had a long 10 days. Oof. I'm here for you.
I thought he looked really good in that fight against Russell, and he showed some real class. So, you know, now he's there. He's already a former champion. He was, you know, he popped for drugs a while ago. And then you got the Isak Cruz. And that's the fight that Teofimo said that he wants, because that elevates him monetarily and in terms of his status, which I get. So I don't know why he wouldn't just try and stay at 40, because I favor him in all those fights, Isak Cruz included. But, you know, work your way through. You're the man of the division. Go fight Paro. Go collect some belts. Go fight Pollo. Or if Pollo still has it by the time you get past Paro. And then, you know, the ultimate fight. Him and Isak Cruz for the unification. I think that's a massive, massive fight. You put that in Texas or Arizona or Vegas. You get the Mexican fan base that's attached to Isak Cruz. You now have a unification at 140. You got Teofimo Lopez versus a Mexican star. Isak Cruz turned into a star after his last fight. Boom. That's exactly what he's looking for. He likes belts. He thinks belts are important. Got all the belts. Boom. He likes the status. That's the status. You got a Mexican fan base. It just makes so much sense for him to stay at 40, go collect those belts. And then if you want to move up to 47, go to 47. Yeah, yeah. The Brian Norman Jr. fight is, I get it. There's luster on that because you're picking up a belt in a third weight class, and I think he beats Norman. But it doesn't have the name recognition that he's looking for.
Right. That's the thing with Teofimo. It's like I sometimes get confused on what drives him. Is it the belts? Because he'll talk about the ring belt. He'll talk
Depends what time of day you talk to him.
He'll talk about I'm three-time undisputed, when that could be very disputed. What?
I'm in the Hall of Fame already.
Right, yeah. It's like I just don't really know where his head's at sometimes. Like, yes, I think
accolades. I don't know if he knows where his head's at. Knock on him. I think he's a wild character.
He'll tell you that himself. So I don't know if it's like the accolades that are driving him, or he wants the fame and the attention that a big fight with like a Haney or a Tank would do. I'm in a lockstep with you, Chris. A fight with Pitbull Cruz at 140 is the fight right now, because the division is constantly shifting. They're by far two of the biggest names. They're, to me, 1-2 in a division. So if there's a name in your division, if there's a lucrative opportunity in your division, go for it. I wouldn't even wait for it to be a undisputed fight. Just do it next. Like, he's fighting in August against Jose Venezuela. If Pitbull wins that, which he should, get into talks right away. You're 26, Teofimo. Get moving. Like, yeah. Devin Haney has built has been making more money than you. And has a little bit of bigger fame than you. Ryan Garcia is a bigger name than you. Tank is a bigger name than you. No offense to what we saw on Saturday night.
And they've all made more money than him.
Right.
I think Teofimo is wildly underpaid.
He's underpaid. You know, he's fighting a Steve Claggett in Miami. It's not on par with his contemporaries. It's not on par with Haney, Ryan Garcia, Tank. Like, those are the names that he came up with. He has all the talent in the world. I think he's just as good as all of those guys. But something isn't all adding up here. He needs a big dance partner. Pitbull can be that at 140, and then I agree. Go to 147 from there. Like, Haney could be at 147 by then. Ryan Garcia, once his whole drug thing subsides, could potentially settle in at 147 if he gets his head on straight. It's a big if. But there are names at 147 that Teofimo can go after. If he wants to go for the Norman route, yeah, he can beat him and get that title and accolades. But there are some names at 140. Now, everyone's bringing up like Tank and stuff. Like, we talked about that last week. Like Tank versus Tio is a fight we all want to see.
Yeah.
The performance that you saw from Teofimo Lopez, is that enough to beat a Gervonta Davis?
I'm never going to base it off his last performance, because you got to look at the guy you have in front of him. And Teofimo, especially because he's a guy who fights to the level of his competition. When he has his back against the wall, he fights his best. A guy like Tank, who's so dangerous, that's when we're going to see the best version of Teofimo Lopez. And I don't know if we've ever seen the best version of Tio. I truly think that he is a phenomenal talent. But it's that thing that's attached to the rest of his body that is the issue. I mean, for those of you who are just listening, I'm pointing at the head.
Yeah, because that could be taken a few different ways.
Yeah, it's the brain in that skull.
Yes,
and the
above
mind.
The shoulders.
Yeah, above the shoulders. That's a good way to put it. It's that thing above his shoulders, which I think is the issue, because when he is dialed in, I don't know if anybody beats him. Like we were there ringside when he fought Taylor, and he looked awesome. I was there ringside when he fought Lomachenko, and man, did he look awesome. And then he fights a guy like Jermaine Ortiz or a guy like Sandor Martin or to a much lesser degree, a guy like Klagen. It's like, well, it leaves a lot to be desired. But he had a great quote. He goes, hey, what happens? These guys, I win. You put me in with the best guy, I beat him. And he's right. You know, if you get him to the big fight, he wins.
Put Klagen in there with some other guys at 140, your favorite fighter at 140. And I'm not saying Klagen would win, but there
was some everybody.
That's a pressure fighter. That is a style that is really hard to look good at. That is a style where you're going to be uncomfortable. And I thought Teofimo handled himself really well inside.
Klagen's kind of guy. If you don't starch him early, you're in an ugly fight. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. If you don't knock him out early, you're in a tough fight.
He's going to lump you up. He's going to lump you up. Teofimo was lumped up. That doesn't mean anything to me. It just shows that everyone is their facial. You would know this more than anyone. They're built different. So
I said that on telecast. He's a guy whose face marks up very easily. I had a face
like
that. I hate
when people use that. I'm not saying there's a lot. There's a few people that are like, look at his face.
Look at the damage. Look at the damage.
That doesn't matter.
His face is completely unmarked. Who do you think won? It's like, I love the, who would you rather be at the end of the fight? Like, yeah, do I care if I have a black eye? I'm a professional fighter. Like, stop. Yes.
Like a stiff, a light breeze would cut Toro Gatti and mark him up. So like it's
dude,
it's
I get bruises brushing my teeth sometimes. So everyone's skin is different.
Yeah. So Teofimo, I thought was a good performance. Still leaves a little bit to be desired. That's only because he has really high expectations from fight fans, and I do want to see him in unification with Pitbull. And I think he has options, which was always a good thing for Teofimo. Quickly before we say goodbye, Robesi Ramirez. Knockout of the year candidate. Chris, you're on the call for potentially the knockout of the year. Uppercut from the gods. 126 is a really, really fun division. We'll have to spend some time on another episode. But it looks like we're going to get Robesi Ramirez, Rafael Espinosa rematch. And it's got some juice now because Ramirez landed an uppercut. I mean, that's like an all-timer right there.
I haven't listened back to it, but I think that might have been one of my best calls ever because I was able to see what Robesi was doing. And I was getting really pushed by the truck to get really granular on the technical aspects of what Robesi was doing. And I was watching, I'm a fan of Robesi. I've been watching him for a long time, actually. Two-time gold medalist. Listen, dude, you got pedigree upon pedigree. And I think he's been recharged from that loss against Espinosa last week, especially since Espinosa looked so phenomenal 2 weeks ago. So I think Robesi had a chip on his shoulder. Plus he's been doing the work. He came in and understood that he had to look spectacular in this fight. And God, did he ever. I mean, the technical proficiency that he showed, offensive, defensively, talk about complete fighter. He did it all. And I was just about to say it. I almost put my foot in my mouth. And I was like, I don't know. You know, if he doesn't, I was going to say the only thing missing is a spectacular finish. And it doesn't necessarily look like it's going to happen. And then bingo, he hits him with that uppercut. Like you said, Dan, that is a career highlight knockout. That's not like a highlight for this year. That's not like a highlight. Oh, knockout of the year. No, that's a knockout of a career type clip that we're going to see for years after Robesi retires. That thing was gnarly. He had a guy who was very, very tough. He was taking the shots and he was doing things that he was doing all night long, dipping, changing levels, changing angles, boom, drops down, comes up with that uppercut from hell. And the way that my man's body just gave out and he went down. There was no shot he was getting up. Absolutely photo finish that was just epic and highlight reel stuff. Ramesh Ramirez he's damn good, dude.
He's so good. I like what you said of how he varies up his offense and defense. Like, he shows you so many different looks in there. He's got the pedigree. Rafael Espinoza is like a force to be reckoned with. I can't wait for that rematch. And yeah, like uppercuts, guys fall down different from uppercuts. They're like when you cut down a tree. It's like, unbelievable.
The body
Check out it's on like Top Rank's Instagram. Your reaction to the knockout or right away. That was awesome. That was the co-main event. Quickly, Nico Ali Walsh turned heel last night.
I liked what he said, man. He's growing on me.
I'm gonna preface this by saying that he's an outstanding individual.
Yeah.
Kid is great. I mean,
very likable.
Obviously, ESPN is going to push the hell out of the fact that he is Muhammad Ali's grandson. I don't know for sure if he likes it. I don't know. He's clearly going to benefit from it.
He hams it up a bit.
Yes, he does.
He does ham it up.
He goes, once again, is in tough with the guy. I forgot it. I don't even know the guy. You would probably know the guy.
Probably, yeah.
Who
His nickname is great. It's, what is it? Because he's a rapper.
Did this guy beat him?
Yeah. Yeah, I called that fight too.
Okay, so he avenges a loss, but it wasn't easy. Like, he was getting tagged left and right. I think Ali Walsh is – he's got a lot of work ahead. I don't know where
he's super limited. Limited.
After the fight, he's like, I hear boos. I hear this, that, and the other. Teofimo Lopez disrespected me. I thought he was going to call out Teofimo for a second, and I was like, okay, like, that's not a good idea. But he goes to this Jake Paul route. He goes, I could have fought Jake Paul and I turned down millions. I was like, bro, that's not the flex that you think it is. Like, I'm a real boxer after putting on a performance that he just put on. I'm the real boxer. He's a circus clown. Like, dude, turning down millions, not a good idea. Like, that Jake Paul fight, I think, just got even bigger yesterday. And I like that fight. I like Nico Ali Walsh versus Jake Paul. I don't like Nico Ali Walsh on the first fight of the night on ESPN, which is a huge slot where you could have Emiliano Vargas who fought on the undercard. They have put Ali Walsh over some big time names in some big time slots. And like you said, he's a limited fighter, but calling it the Jake Paul thing was just, I get it. It was raw emotion. And it was the most memorable thing I've seen of Ali Walsh so far in his career was that post fight interview. Nothing in the ring.
Listen, I'm a guy who has knocked Ali Walsh, and I thought it was a bit of a circus, just going on the name. But honestly, though, he's winning me over because I really think he is. He's acting like a fighter, he really is. And I think us fighters, us, man, we got chips on our shoulders. We read stuff. The Twitter remarks affect us. And I think like he said, I think he's actually becoming a fighter at this point. Like, I don't think he ever was. I don't think he was a fighter. I think he was just. He was cosplaying a fighter because of his grandfather, but now I think he's actually turned into a fighter. Listen, you could say that first loss. He takes that first loss. He gets upset, and he got beat up in that fight. It was a close fight, but he lost. I thought he lost that night. He argued it. I didn't think so, but then he takes the rematch. He wants to avenge the loss. He could have easily just packed it up and be like, all right, I went for it. That's what it is. What it is. I got handed my position. But he came back and he actually boxing well early in the fight. He made the adjustments that he needed to do. He just kind of ran out of gas and he had a tough guy in front of him. But then afterwards, the Jake Paul thing comes up. And I wouldn't hate that fight if Jake Paul hadn't said a year ago that he was going to go the grassroots route and become a real boxer. And then he talks about the Mike Tyson fight. And I'm like, ugh, what are you doing? I thought you were trying to be a real fighter. Now the Mike Tyson fight falls through. So now you just try and handpick another legendary name, from Nico Ali Walsh, who's way smaller. And way lower on the level. I don't like that kind of stuff. So him calling that out doesn't bother me much. I take it as Nico having a chip on his shoulder. Now he's trying to be a fighter, and I get what he was trying to say. He's trying to be a real fighter. He's like, yes. I'm a real fighter. I'm going the real route. He's trying to. He's very early on. Yeah, he's basically, saying, he's like, respect what I'm trying to do because you're trying.
What
to fight
the hell,
me.
Man?
I'm trying to become a champion one day. Whether that ever comes close is another question. But I respect the fact that he's putting in the work. Again, super limited, not very talented. It's going to take a lot of work. It may never, never happen, but the kid's trying. And
that's
I can appreciate
point.
That. He's
that's
trying.
My point. I'm not saying he's not trying. I'm not saying he's not putting in the effort. I respect the hell out of that. But will he eventually give in and fight a Jake Paul for the millions.
Very possible.
About.
And I'm would you sure not for it? If it's not working, let me go get some money. But let me leave this sport where most guys don't.
Right.
Because most guys leave the sport or get beaten out of the sport and they have nothing in their pockets. You know, this kid has an opportunity to, you know, say it doesn't work out. Say he catches another loss with an old Kali type guy. And then he cashes out. You going to knock him for that? No. I don't think so.
It was a great weekend of fights.
Can't believe I'm going to bat for Nico Ali Walsh.
I know. That was like, you almost, you kind of convinced me a little bit because I just thought he kind of played himself a little bit. It's like, I just watched you.
It was emotional. I think it was more emotional. And I get, dude, post-fight interviews are hard, Dan. You've never done a post-fight interview. They are hard.
No, I've been on the other side. I've been on
Right, you've been on that side. But, like, dude, I'm telling you, as a fighter,
like you were Friday night.
Also, the kid's shoulders popped out of its socket while he's doing that.
That was crazy.
That was crazy. Some people at home, if you didn't watch the fight, he comes out, he starts boxing really well, drops a guy in the third round, has a nice cushion going in. Guy comes back, 4 or 5, wins those 2 rounds. Round 6, it's like, wow, this guy is a big round. We can look at a draw. But Nico's getting beat up at times too. So it's like, this guy might finish him. Soon as the round starts, the kid's shoulder pops out like Lethal Weapon style, Mel Gibson, trying to knock it back in. He's punching his own shoulder to try and put you've got the collarbone sticking out of his shoulder. I saw it right away. I grabbed Test. I'm like, look at his shoulder. And now you're doing this post-fight interview, probably in like white knuckle pain. And then, you know, you're a little bent because you're now a fighter. And I get it. I'm going to bat for the kid because I finally see him thinking like a fighter and acting like a fighter.
Okay, with all that being said, he's never going to be a world champion.
No.
With all that being said, you should probably fight Jake Paul.
You know, now you convince me. Damn it.
Yeah. With all that being said, like when Top Rank is like, all right, we can't be giving you these slots anymore. And maybe they even sever ties with him. He's signed by MVP. He's fighting on Misfits, and then we're just gonna be like, all right, man, we just kind of like circled around and got to the point. Which I'm not gonna knock him because he could make a lot of money in that route, and he'd probably do really well because I do think he has some raw skills.
I mean, he better start eating. I just watched a video of Jake Paul doing road work. Yo, he looked like a tank.
Yeah, Jake, way too big.
Dude, he is huge. He looked all of 215 and jacked.
He's
and Nico Ali Walsh is a small middleweight.
Yeah, that's just part of that avenue of boxing where like weight classes
don't matter.
Don't matter.
Names.
I want this guy. Let's put him here. Let's put him there. That's our show this week. Great weekend of fights. Our next episode will be a great one. It will be the halfway point of 2024. We're gonna. It's July 1st, bro. It's crazy. We will look back at the year that was, the first 6 months. We will predict the following 6 months. We'll have a grand old time. That will take you into 4th of July weekend. So me and Chris, we'll record that maybe tomorrow. We'll record that maybe early this week so we can enjoy a nice 4th of July weekend. Chris, go lay down.
Yeah, I'm going to take a nap.
Clyde, go pet Clyde.
Boy, Clyde.
So order out. Don't cook anything. Order out.
No, I'm making I need a steak, dude. I need some red meat.
Need a steak. As if you didn't have steak nonstop, and I saw a massive steak on your plate and wherever you were.
Oh no, that was on vacation though. I mean, I've been working hard the past couple of days, and you know what? It's funny because people ask me like, oh, you know, like you must get these great meals when you're on these work. I don't eat. I treat when I work fights. I feel like I'm fighting, so I don't eat. I'm like really. Like,
you're nuts.
I want to be hungry when I'm at the desk.
I'm bringing snacks to the table.
No, I want to be hungry. I want to be sharp. I want to be on that edge. I want to be on that edge of survival where I'm like I'm looking for my next meal. I treat calls like fights. I run sprints. I want to be dialed in. Dialed in. So I want to be a little hungry.
Give us one little nugget on Tess. What's it like to sit next to him? Did you learn anything?
Yeah. Yeah, he is cool, calm, and collected. I mean, that guy, he is such a consummate professional, and he does it with ease, but his delivery is exceptional. It's over the top. It's so funny being between him and Kriegel. You know, Mark is you know, very dialed in. He's very heady, and Tess is just cool. Just a cool dude, man. He's like, don't worry, man. Whatever happens, just be you. That was just be you. It was awesome. Well, very, very, I was honored and blessed. To have Tess, I know you're listening. Appreciate you, man.
He probably felt the same way about you. So that was really cool. I hope everyone enjoyed the fights this weekend. I hope everyone enjoys their 4th of July week. Don't work too hard out there. We'll be back with another episode at the end of the week. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Go eat a steak in honor of Chris Algieri.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.